Broadcasting live from Roberta's in Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.com. The holidays are here, and it's time to head to the Heritage Meat Shop for some juicy Berkshire pork roast, tender Piedmontese steaks, traditional Christmas goose, and duck. Our world-famous charcuterie and fresh meats are guaranteed to please everyone, whether it's a party of two or 200. Be sure to stop by the Heritage Meat Shop to make your holiday celebration a delicious and memorable event. The Heritage Meat Shop is located at 120 Essex Street in the historic Essex Street Market on the Lower East Side of Manhattan. Call 212-539-1111 to order now.
Hi, and welcome to A Taste of the Past. I'm your host, Linda Palacio, on this half-hour journey through culinary history. And we are in the midst of holiday time and the winter season, although here in the East, winter season, it doesn't feel like the winter season. We could use a little bit of snow for the holidays. But when we think of the holidays, what do we all think of special meals, special foods, and of course, special drinks. There are punches and hot toddies and another new generation is rediscovering the cocktail. And when I'm out I hear a lot of old fashioned drinks, like the old fashioned being ordered, the old fashioned, the Manhattan, the sidecar, the Rob Roy, the B&B. And in these drinks there's always something that makes them just a little special, whether it's some exotic bitters or a particular liqueur. And today we are going to talk about one of those particular liqueurs, probably something that many of you have in your liquor cabinet, but maybe don't pull out all that often unless you're mixing something special. And that particular liqueur I'm talking about is Benedictine. And I have with me today the brand ambassador for Benedictine, the only people who make Benedictine, and that is Martin Duffy. Martin is a former mixologist and, as I say, the current brand ambassador for Benedictine. And Martin joins us from Chicago. Welcome, Martin.
Hi, Linda. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you. Well, who would have ever thought that something that's been around for 500 years and created within the church, no less, would still be used today?
Tell, I know, 500 years old, and yet it's new again.
That's right. Well, Martin, there is a little skepticism about the history, but it's a great story. Can you tell us a little bit about, well, first of all, tell us what is Benedictine? What is it, you know, if people have never tasted it before, what is it?
Well, Benedictine is a liqueur that is a mixture of 27 different spices and herbs, along with honey and a neutral grain spirit made from beetroot, which actually grows wild in the areas of Normandy where the liqueur is produced.
Hmm. And as the story has it, this was produced, as I said, 500 years ago. Tell us a little bit about that, about the history.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I mean, technically, it did start 500 years ago. That's when the birth of Benedictine, but the story goes back even further, and when we talk about the evolution of fermented beverages, goes back 10,000 BC in Egypt and China and India. And then in the Islamic world, around the 7th century, you had the beginning of distillation and the beginning of the alchemists. And that's really where it all begins, really, is with alchemy. In the Islamic world, you had these alchemists who were creating perfumes and medicines. And the wonderful thing about it is that they're actually writing these things down. As these books got into Europe, the only ones who could really read were the folks in the in the centers of knowledge. That was the abbeys.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the friars and the monks. They began to study this, and these were not only centers of knowledge, but they're also centers of medicine. And so if you're sick, you go to an abbey. The Benedictine order was encouraged not only in piety, but study. And since they studied, they could read, they took on alchemy with a fever. They're always looking for this panacea, this universal medicine, this water of life, which eventually resulted in some of the wonderful liqueurs we have today.
Well, it's interesting. Yeah, you say the abbeys were always their great. The monks living in the abbeys were always known for being great farmers, for being great grape growers and winemakers. So I guess it stands to reason they would be making medicine. So this initially developed as a medicine, an elixir for cures?
Well, yeah, because most friars weren't looking to create, the next great cocktail. They were using herbs and spices, which, as you're saying, they're farmers, so they're growing them themselves. They're also located in areas where trade was very common. And sometimes the abbeys were the centers of trade as well. So they had access to new plants and herbs and spices from different parts of the world. And they're always looking for their rejuvenating abilities. So, jettison to 1505, there was a friar by the name of Don Bernardo Vincelli. Dom was the name for a Benedictine friar. In 1505, he was sent to the Abbey of Fécamp, which is a town in northwestern Normandy, from southern Italy, Monte mm-hmm. Cassino, which was the first community founded by St. Benedict.
Took them a while to get to Normandy. They had to travel the Crusades and all. They had to travel a little far north to get there.
Yes, it took a while too. When he moved to Fécamp, now Fécamp is a port town. So once again, availability of spices and herbs. He was known to have created a number of elixirs, but the one that really caught on was what later became known as Benedictine. In fact, it became the favorite drink of King Francois of France in the early 1500s.
Hmm.
Now, the monks at Fécamp produced this spirit for about 300 years until the French Revolution in 1789.
Uh-huh.
The French kicked out all the religious orders. The monks had to leave very quickly. And so they had to leave behind a lot of important documents. So they entrusted it to certain people. And one of these people was an ancestor of a gentleman by the name of Alexander Le Grand. Some 74 years later, in 1863, Alexander Le Grand finds a recipe in the family papers. It was just serendipity that it was Alexander, because Alexander was a wine and spirit merchant.
Oh.
He knew about distillation. He knew about liqueurs. So it really grabbed his eye when he saw this. He saw this recipe, but now it's written in Latin. He had to decipher it. Plus, he also had to figure out measurements as far as the different botanicals were concerned. And so it took him about a year to really perfect the recipe.
And I would imagine he would have to find some of these herbs growing, or else try to track down some seeds and grow them himself. Right? I mean, that was
right.
Would not be the easiest thing to find.
Or search the world.
Uh-huh.
To actually import some of these, and once again, importing something in this would be 1863. It would still take months for something that, say, come from China. Once he perfected the spirit, he received permission from Rome, from the Benedictine order, to call it Benedictine in honor of Dom Bernardo. He even used the motto of the Benedictine order, D-O-M, which stands for Deo Optimo Maximo, to God, the good, the great.
Yeah, you see that on the bottle. There's a circle there.
I'm sorry?
I said there's a circle on the bottle, and you see that quite large on every bottle right there.
All right.
That circle that says D-O-M.
Yeah, very prominent.
Yeah.
Supposedly, Alexander used that as a toast every time he toasted with Benedictine.
Ah.
It was also a tribute to the friars themselves, since that was not only their motto, but that's what you refer to a friar as a dom.
That's right. We have Dom Perignon as well. Right?
Yes, that's right. Right. Well, then he was too.
He was a monk,
a friar.
That's right.
Alexander Le Grand was so happy with the spirit, and the spirit really took off within a year or two. It was already being exported to the United States. He was selling thousands of cases. So he built a palace in Sekhem that you can still visit today in honor of the liqueur.
Well, now,
it's an amazing place.
Is this on the grounds of the original abbey? Was the original abbey, did they destroy the original abbey completely?
They didn't destroy it. There's chunks of it that were destroyed, and oddly enough, during the French Revolution, they wanted to, one of the things that you still notice at the Abbey's still standing, they still hold mass at the Abbey, but the statues all have their heads cut off.
Mm-hmm. Typical war crimes.
Throughout France. Yeah, they're a little heavy into cutting off the heads back then,
so
statues were not spared.
So Le Grand built a palace in Fécamp, in the same region.
Right, a short walk, actually, from the actual abbey. And there's a lot of tie-in between the two. In fact, the coat of arms of the Benedictine palace is the same coat of arms as the abbey has three abbot hats on the crest. Now, he finished the palace in 1888, but unfortunately, two disgruntled individuals who were turned away for employment there burned it down in 1892.
Ooh!
So he had to. It was really a shame too.
Yeah.
He was so happy with it; it was just finished. So he had to rebuild it, and he rebuilt it even grander.
Well, I have seen
Gothic style.
Yeah, I've seen pictures of. Well, I mean, only the outside. I haven't seen pictures of the inside, but it. I mean, it truly is. Like a castle. I mean, it is a palace,
yeah.
Indeed. It's quite impressive.
It has spires and gables and gargoyles. It's really amazing.
And
really
is the
beautiful.
Is the liqueur manufactured and produced on site at the castle?
It is.
Or the palace. Yeah.
So you can go through a museum. They have a number of wonderful eclectic religious articles, odd medieval collection of locks, straight and keys, very odd, but also famous paintings, even some modern ones, Andy Warhol, Dali.
Huh.
they're all represented there.
I guess they all
eclectic place.
They all liked Benedictine, right?
Yeah.
Well, that's.
And then another interesting little part of the museum is they also have a counterfeit museum. So is the you'll see on the wall all the different liqueurs that have tried to pass themselves off as Benedictine over the century.
Well, I guess that's flattery, trying to imitate the recipe. So often imitated,
exactly.
But never reproduced, huh?
It's never duplicated. That's right,
because
the recipe is a secret. The exact recipe is only known by just three persons at any given time.
Tell me about that. I've heard that there's this sacred sect that only three people at a time know the exact recipe.
Yeah. Well, because of all the counterfeiting that took place, especially in the early part of the 20th century, they had to limit the people who actually knew the exact recipe. And even to this day, it's very difficult to find out even all 27 botanicals to go into it, or how they divvy it up when they do produce it.
Well, we're going to take a short break, and when we come back, I want to talk about these botanicals. I want to talk about the exact, some of the tastes that are in there, and we'll talk about what we can do with Benedictine. Okay? So stay tuned.
You bet.
Feeding a flock near to the mountainside. Feeding a flock near to the mountainside.
A shepherd knew not whither she was gone.
But knew not whither she was gone. But after her lover,
the
minter's hide.
Up and down,
up and down he wandered.
Up and down, up and down, up and down he wandered.
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 Where she was missing.
She was missing.
When he found her. Oh, then they fell a kissing. Oh, then they fell a kissing, a kissing. Oh, then they fell a kissing.
Up and down,
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 up and down.
We are back, and I'm talking with Martin Duffy about Benedictine, the history, the use, the taste. And, you know, I read somewhere, Martin, that Benedictine is has quite a huge audience, we know, with bartenders and home mixologists alike. But there is a club in the United Kingdom in Lancashire called the Burnley Miners Club. I've heard that they are the world's largest single consumer of Benedictine. Did you? I mean, I don't know where I came across that.
Yeah.
But,
I'm talking about that. I've never missed it, but that's what I've heard.
Yeah, interesting.
Which is pretty amazing. We're hoping to create something very similar right here in the United States.
Ah, well, I guess they supposedly acquired a taste for it during the First World War, and it was something that just sort of stuck with them. But so when we taste Benedictine, tell me, you talk about all these herbs that are in it, herbs and spices, and what's the predominant flavor of someone who's never tasted Benedictine, and they take a little sip? What, describe that for us.
Well, I think one of the first things you'll notice is a real tingle of cinnamon on the tongue. And then, of course, the honey. And it's an amazing contrast to just the creamy smoothness of the honey, and then this spicy tingle of cinnamon. Clove is definitely on the back of the throat. As you breathe out, you really pick up the clove. Also, you'll pick up things such as, you'll notice thyme, and cardamom. These are the most prominent ones, but there's also citrus. You pick up a definite citrus note, because one of the things they do use is lemon rind.
Uh-huh.
So you do get a lemon zest coming through, which I think is one of the reasons why so many mixologists go to it. It's a bartender's friend, because there are so many different avenues you can take when creating a cocktail with it. You can build off the citrus, you can build off the cinnamon, you can build off of the clove. It complements so many other spirits, such as whiskey. So it's a natural, say, an old fashioned or even a Manhattan.
Oh, you would use it.
Benedictine.
I mean, the only drink that I ever really knew, not being a big cocktail drinker, and growing up, you know, listening to my parents talk about the cocktails they would drink, and a B&B. I knew that Benedictine was in a B&B, and that's Benedictine and brandy, right?
Right, which is interesting, because the B&B, the brandy and Benedictine, no one's quite sure when it did start. I know that there's writings talking about it was one of Hemingway's favorite cocktails back in the 20s. However, it didn't really get big attention until the 21 Club made it famous. The bartenders were really big into blending Benedictine with brandy.
Huh.
And this was about 1937. And it's what inspired the Benedictine folks in France to bottle their own version. But it's a
like a pre
it is not a bottled cocktail. It is a liqueur.
It's a liqueur. B&B, the actual Benedictine and brandy is comes in a bottle, B&B, and it's a...
Yes.
Yeah, interesting.
Currently, it's a similar bottle, but they are going to be changing up because so many people get confused between the two. And oddly enough, too, B&B is not necessarily Benedictine and brandy. I guess technically it is. But they actually use a cognac, a Baron Otard cognac from the cognac region, as opposed to just a plain brandy.
Oh, interesting. Yeah. Well, what would you, other than this B&B, and you said sometimes in an old-fashioned, what kind of drinks have you ever created a drink with it, or what kind of drinks would you use Benedictine in, other than sipping it on its own?
Well, especially you were talking about the holiday season and just the cold weather that we experience. I'm currently in Chicago, and you feel the chill getting into your bones. So I think of hot drinks and very simple and yet very, very tasty cocktails. It's something, take green tea, for instance. Very simple, Benedictine and green tea.
Oh, so we can be healthy and high at the same time.
Yeah, it's really, really gorgeous together. They really complement one another, and it really warms the cockles.
Mm.
If you're into hot chocolate, and who isn't, a little Benedictine and hot chocolate. Maybe even around Halloween, you could pull out the apple cider, heat it up, put in Benedictine and cinnamon stick.
So basically, Marty, what I'm hearing is anything goes, huh?
Well, just about. It does complement, and once again, I think it goes towards the complexity of the spirit, that it does go so well with so many different mixers. A very simple cocktail, and it's kind of a take on the old classic Tom Collins, but instead of using gin, use Benedictine, along with lemon juice and soda. And now you have a Dom Collins.
Huh. You know, it's interesting because a lot of the bartenders, there are a lot of mixologists out there who are, they really are experimenting with bringing more herbs and spices and really strong flavors into certain cocktails and creating their own. And I think that certainly this is nothing new. And it dates back, as you said, way back to the 16th century. So they just sort of reviving the old alchemy that was taking place at that time.
Well, we really are, yeah.
And certainly this is something for those who aren't familiar with it to experiment with. And I always said it was a bottle that sat there in the back of my liquor cabinet, but I never really pulled it out because I wasn't quite sure what to do with it. But now I have some new ideas. And certainly when mixing punches or cocktails, the holiday season or any time, actually, I'm going to be a little more experimental. But mostly I was really intrigued by the history. Yes, I do like the taste, but I'm, of course, always intrigued by the history of someone creating a medicine that then becomes a very popular liqueur, and I think that's pretty neat. So I thank you so much for sharing all your knowledge with us, and have a wonderful holiday season. Again, thank you.
Thank you, Linda. Happy holidays.
Thank you. This is Linda Palaccio, and you've been listening to A Taste of the Past.
On December 17th, Typhoon Sendang dropped over 180 millimeters of rain in less than 24 hours and caused severe flash flooding to the northern Mindanao region of the Philippines. The cities of Iligan and Cagayan de Oro City were hit the worst, and the area has suffered severe damage and human loss. 654 people have been claimed dead, hundreds more are missing, and nearly 100,000 Filipinos have been displaced after the floodwaters destroyed everything in its path during the late hours of the night. The city's power and water supplies were shut down for nearly 24 hours, and many Filipinos need your help. Xavier University is accepting donations to help those in need. Please visit www.sendongrelief.org for more information. That's www.sendongrelief.org.